Hi everyone, welcome to conference call number 167 with Rebbe, the definition of the Rebbe Yaman Hamlin, the founder of Rebbe.
Thank you very much. There are four follow-up questions, and then there's quite a few new ones. Let's begin. A married woman moved her older parents to live on the first floor apartment of their two-family house. Her mother suffers from dementia and was approved for a 24-hour aid, though they only currently have an aid of 12 hours. The elderly father wants to make early Shabbos, and his son-in-law willingly drives him to the early minyan. What can he do for lighting? His wife cannot light anymore. The married daughter does not want to make early Shabbos. Can she light downstairs for her father, having in mind that it's only for her parents? Should she make a bracha, or is there a different option? Father's not able to daven mincha gedola. Even if he can, he'd light himself after plak and then go to shul. He would probably arrive in the middle of Maariv. I think the answer is that yes, the married daughter can light without making early Shabbos. She can having in mind for only for her parents. Of course, she has to make a tznai that she's not accepting Shabbos at the point in time. In cases of this nature, we permit this time to take place. Question two. The floating wicks all come with the holes not poked out, just perforated, so it's easy to gently push out the hole. Would that be a more serious issue that one must avoid and prepare before Yom Tov? The answer is yes. Last time, I thought that the floating wicks mostly were poked out. If one wasn't poked out, I thought it maybe was originally poked out and then it came back together again. On that basis, I thought there was a room to be makel. But if they're all not poked out, clearly it was done in that way on purpose. I did see that this quoted from a Sefer Shari Hora, Chelek Ches, Pesach Kuf Ches, that Rav Yashiv Zatzal was Machmir, either because of Korea or because of Makkah B'Patish. So whatever I said the last session is null and void, because these prohibitions could even exist in cases where they were mostly knocked out, and therefore I think they should make sure to poke the holes through before Yontif. Number three, the intention of the person heating up the medium rare meat on the Israeli plata is not to cook it more, just wants to heat it up. He is aware that it might cook more, although he does not like his meat cooked more. He's willing to put on so it should be hot. Is it allowed for him to put the medium rare meat on the plata on Shabbos? So let's get straight. He wants it to be hot. As a result, it may have a little more cooking. Even if there would be some kind of prohibition of cooking, we have to say it's a psik resha de lo nichole. He doesn't want it. Now, psik resha lo nichole, we paskin is in the Shulchan Aruch to be machmir. However, whenever there's a doubt, the post can suggest any kind of doubt, by definition, out of psik resha. So here, in our situation, we know that if once something is cooked, we call kamacho ben brusoi, which is obviously this is edible, then according to many, if not most, Rishonim, we say it is ain bishul lach bishul. The Rambam is strict, of course we follow the Rambam, but it is a matter of dispute, and therefore some might say it's permissible even a psik resha, the nichole, what they call a suvei psik resha. We don't go that far, but over here, that's a psik resha the lo nichole, which according to many is permissible. And according to some authorities, he didn't do anything, because they already reached Makkah ben Dusoy. It seems to be we can be lenient based upon this combination of factors. Number four. Hadol the microphone. The leaders of the Shabbaton are not willing to do any part of not over the microphone. Should one be Yotzi with the public Abdullah made over the microphone? Have a mind to be Yotzi and make it, not to be Yotzi and make it later by himself. I think he should make it later by himself because according to some authorities, they're not Yotzi with the microphone. Okay, new questions. Number one. A woman in her 50s who says she no longer has periods has a non-hormonal IUD removed. She bleeds for 2-3 days. She says the doctor told her she would likely bleed that long during to entry when the IUD is removed. The doctor was Jewish, but not observant. The blood was seen on colored garments. Is this woman a nida, or due to the IUD removal, due to the subsequent bleeding? Now, let's go slow. An IUD is a contraceptive. The woman has no longer has periods. I'm not sure why she needs a contraceptive in the first place. But in any event, after she is postmenopausal, so the blood, by definition, is going to be what we call a dam maka, blood of a wound, and therefore it does not render her a nida. Even in earlier years, many authorities assume that something which comes out from a wound in the uterus is called dam maka and not dam nida. Some disagree because the blood would have come out later when the hormones would have kicked in. That doesn't apply to a postmenopausal woman. In any event, she sees it on colored garments. In my opinion, she's not a nida. Number two, when one used a 3D printer to produce a small image of a dragon or a doll in the shape of a person for children to play with. Dragons are no problems. Persons, there's an issue in the Shulchan Aruch of a three-dimensional human figure as being something which should not be made, not be held. It seems to me that there is an exception drawn for what's called a dove mevuza, something which is not honorable. I believe, not knowing anything about 3D printers, that this doll in the shape of a person is not considered honorable. As a result, it's permissible. Next question. Talk about a Flonase. Flonase is used as over-the-counter nasal spray. People who symptoms, allergy symptoms, nasal congestion, itchy, watery eyes, sneezing and runny nose. Reduce inflammation by inhibiting production of inflammatory substances. Those symptoms don't seem to rise to the level of cholashim basakana. Could one permit this medication based on the Taz's heter for medication that only treats symptoms and does not cure illness? Alternatively, could one permit taking prophylactically before symptoms develop? That seems to be the implied in Igris Moshe Yordaya Dalad Yud Gimel Beis regarding asthma. Not sure I'm reading correctly. I think that you read it correctly. There are two svaras to be mekel, both of them. One is the Taz, and one is Rav Moshe. It's true that people disagree with both. Rav Moshe quotes somebody, the Taz, they both quote people who disagree with them. However, I believe it's a svek sveka with respect to an Issa de Rabbanon of medicines, and let's not forget there are those who claim that nowadays the whole gzera doesn't even apply at all, because we no longer do shchika saman manim in our homes. So I believe, based upon these svek sveka, two Sdorim Lahakal, even though both are controversial, one can be lenient. Four, on Shabbos, if one permitted to soak strawberries or any other vegetables in soapy water as part of the process to check for and remove any insects. This is a matter of dispute among the Poskim. I give you a Maramokam called the Orchos Shabbos, Perek Gimel, Ha'ara Kuf Chof Tes. It's hard for me to decide who's right. My view has been that you usually don't see any bugs in strawberries. And as a result of that, I think it's okay. If you know it's infested, then I would say not to do it. Five, should a cancer patient who finished treatment with Bench Goimel, he will be moderated over the coming year. The patient is a teenager who does not want to Bench Goimel, should be encouraged to do so. So if you look at Piskei Tshuva, Siman Reish, your test, Os Hei, he says over there that someone who is now Baruch Hashem was healed to the point that he no longer suffers, no longer in pain, should make a bracha, should bench Goimel, even though they continue to give him medicines to prevent the illness from coming back. I believe that this case fits into that category. I think. As a result, benching goal would be appropriate, and the youngster who doesn't want to do it should be encouraged to do it. Can't force him. Number six, I'm a Spanish-speaking actress who plays a role in a daily soap opera on Mexican television. I live in L.A., and the show is filmed in L.A., and my job is important to me. My character is Catholic on the show, as is almost everyone. We occasionally have scenes in churches, actually TV studios, of course. It's all acting. Someone told me that this is prohibited, and I should quit my job, which I don't want to do. It's filming a scene in a pretend church, or playing a Catholic person on TV doing Catholic things, from Christmas celebration to Eucharist, prohibited. Give guidelines if needed. Look, to play on a film with a character who's Catholic, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. However, to appear in a church scene, even if it's not in a real church, and certainly to be involved in Christmas celebrations and Eucharist, that's a totally religious act, is not permitted. I hope they'll be able to keep your job by portraying the Catholic individual without having to actually do Christian activities. Number seven, I quit shurim, mekel shurim, machmas shurim, hamatzah, brachos, or benching. What are my halacha l'maaseh shurim? The mekel or machmas. The Rabbi Aaron noticed his book on shiurim, which presents archaeological evidence of shiurim, persuasive. Should evidence like that change our views in this area? All good questions. Someone gave me a copy of this beautiful book. I have it on my table right now. A very beautiful book, and I believe that what he says is correct, and I believe that archaeology can be considered in making these difficult decisions. So it seems to me that we talk about matzah or brachos or benching, we're talking about a kazayas. So if you look at the very end of this beautiful book, he says kazayas, depending on the olive of today, and the archaeological evidence seems to confirm that our olive is exactly the same as their olives. No difference. No difference. So this is the very end of this book. It's over 200 pages. So on pages 202 and 3, it tells you what a kazayas is. There's so many different kinds of kazayas. Of course, the Mishnah and Kalim use Zion Ches, that an average olive is called kazayas aguri. So one of the experts thinks that a guri is small, or actually the medium size, and that's what he calls suri. Even so, Rabbi Benish, Midas Shiri Torah, suri is only 3 cc's. That's too small, Stav Chazal. He conjectures the other way around. The biggest ones, 7.5 cc's. So you ask, you want it that big? And then you have in between 5 cc's. And some say it's 5.7 cc's. That's Rabbi Badna. So it seems to me that for kazayas of matzah, we should take the biggest one, which is 7.5 cc's, which is still only 1/3 of the Shulchan Aruch shear of a half a kebetza, which is 22.5 cc's. So what I wrote in my Haggadah, that 1/5 of the average hand matzah would suffice for the Shulchan Aruch's kazayas. So for this kazayas, all you need is 1/15. 1/15. And therefore, it seems to me that someone who was celiac can rely on the 1/15 of a typical hand matzah for the shear of kazayas, even according to the strictest view that kazayas is 7.5 cc's. If you take the average, which seems to be the 5 cc's, so it's only 2/3 of the 1/15, which we spoke about before, by higher mathematics, that's less than 1/20. And the smallest, 3 cc's, it's even smaller than that. So for those who have celiac, if they ask a rav, what you should rely upon. This is all as far as the Kazayas is concerned. But the vast majority of this beautiful book has nothing to do with Kazayas. Because Kazayas is no, it's just what a Kazayas looks like. That's all. And all the Cheshbonos were based, they didn't have any olives in Northern Europe, as he points out in this beautiful book. So what really counts is the shear of Revius. Revius, a Lug, a Kibetza, that's where things get interesting. And the Chazon Ish, following the note of Yehuda, the Chasam Sofer said, based on their various calculations, that our Kazesim only half the old Kazesim, which is against all the archaeology. The whole book is a proof that the whole thing is wrong. And it's not true. So what do you do? So it's the same as we look for an olive, we should look for an egg. The problem is eggs also vary tremendously, and we don't know, you know, what kind of egg is an egg. You know, the different sizes of eggs, and they're very significant differences. That's why the Gedolei Olam, for many generations, going back to the Shach, had to figure out what a shear, well, it's for example, for shear challah. Shear challah is 42.2 eggs. So you have to know what it is. So it comes clear from the Shach, as it's pointed out. I pointed out in my Haggadah, and in, I think it's in this book somewhere, that leaves you an egg of only 46 cc's. Our eggs, according to the people who measured in this book, which I always thought was the case, was 50 cc's. Some say, no, it's bigger than that. It's close, it's between 50 and 60 cc's. Chazon Ish, who doubled it, it's 100 cc's. And this, of course, has tremendous impact on all of the shiurim which depend upon this shiur. So what does it come out to? What comes out to is as follows. Reb Chaim Noah was arguing with the Chazon Ish. And this is found at the very, very beginning of this beautiful book. Literally. He has a chart. Before he goes into all the archaeology, he gives you a chart on page 3. He says that according to the opinion of Reb Chaim Noah, so let's take the most common shaila, a revius. A revius is about 3 ounces. According to the Chazon Ish, it's 5 ounces. According to what he calls the Rambam, it's 2.5 ounces. So I've always told people 2.5 ounces is correct because our eggs are 50 cc's. So times I reverse the basal max of 75 cc's. So I tell everybody, want to be a max for more? For 3 ounces, like the Chaim Noah, fine. 5 ounces, Chazon Ish, if you want. No one's going to stop you. But he points out in this beautiful sefer, Reb Chaim Noah came up with his shear based on certain coin values. And it was against the Chazon Ish, who had a much, much bigger shear. He was attacked from the other side by the Yerushalmim, who had a smaller shear. They had the Rambam shear. And what we said now, according to the Shach, is even smaller than the Rambam shear. The Rambam shear based on 50 cc's, and it's only 46 cc's. So therefore, it seems to me, for Revius, 2.5 ounces suffice. You want to have 3 ounces, fine. You want to be Machan for 5, no one's stopping you. What comes up, of course, is of Challah. That's where the Shach is found, in the Yoredeya Simen, Shin, Chav, Dalet, Sivkotan, Gimel. That's where the Shach seems to have this 46 cc egg, less than the 50 that we have today. Or someone, one might tell me, he measured his own eggs, he came up with 55 cc's, not 50. And some say it's even closer to 60 cc's. Again, what's called the average egg? This we don't know. So therefore, when it comes to Farshas Challah, you want to be machmir for the smallest shear of all. I would not make a bracha on that. That's a little over 8 cups of flour. Once you get to 9 cups of flour, shear printed over here on page 3, in my opinion, you can already make a bracha. You want to be more machmir. So we want to wait for 10.5 cups of Reb Chaim Noah, or 18.25 cups of the Chazon Ish. You can, but most people know that's not correct. Next question, number 8. How does she react ashkafically to the recent allegation of sexual abuse in Israeli prisons? What should we think or do? Some of them turn out to be sometimes true. I thank the questioner for his 2 modifications. Some and sometimes. We cannot sadly discount the possibility that some of these horrific acts took place here or there. We can't. You can't. What is troublesome is that in the world outside, they swallow the New York Times whole. Now, we're long-time observers of the New York Times, and as we can use the Hebrew expression, huchzak shakra. They've been proven to lie too numerous times to mention. But various things, and I feel bad when people jump on the bandwagon to criticize actions attributed to the state of Israel, be it prison, or be it the army, or be it the government. We have a right to be critical of what is done wrong from our perspective, be it the army, be it in the government, be it in the prison, within our own circles. But to be critical in the, to the outside world, that's very dangerous. You're giving ammunition, anti-Semites, anti-Zionists, lemineum. What's most bothersome is people's reliance on these individuals, the newspaper Huchzak Shakra, and the sources in this article, also Huchzak Shakra. The whole point of this whole expose in the Times was to blunt the very well-documented expose that Israel's putting out, which is based on videos taken by Hamas themselves about their horrific acts on October 7th. There we have absolute proof of what was done. Here, again, I read through it. I didn't see any independent proof. I heard allegations. But as the questioner said, some of them to be sometimes true. We have to excoriate them so we don't operate that way. It's a terrible thing. But we have to take it that with a grain of salt, with a whole box of salt, that many of these things may never have happened. And the fact that the Times printed it, that people who are, have known to have liars and have no actual proof, means that we cannot take everything they say at face value. So once again, if it happened, it's terrible. But how many times did it happen? I imagine it happened once. Human beings are not perfect, but that is the way they approach it, as rampant as the equivalent of what Hamas was doing to innocent people, totally innocent people, as the moral equivalency of what they think was done to criminals or murderers or terrorists is so way off, both on the evidentiary basis and on the moral basis. So we have to be very careful about these kinds of articles. Number 9. I have a congregant who is completely firm in all of his conduct with a firm family as well. But as an academic, he has views on the revelation of Torah, the end of the universe and creation, and more. He has published that seem to be kfira. He does not bring them into shul at all, and he is wonderful in the svala who comes to shul almost every day. I would not want to distance from him from our shul. Should I? Must I? He never speaks to me about his academic life. Let's go slow. We have to be careful. Dating of the universe, creation. I do not believe that if one subscribes to the fact that the earth is 15 billion years old, that's called kfira. That number was given by Rabbi Yitzchok de Menacho, or Talmud of the Ramban. This was pointed out recently. It's not kfira at all. There are gedolim who said that way. Even evolution, that's only a theory. I believe Rav Hirsch, when Darwinism first came out, said, listen, I don't think it's true, it's only a theory. But if it would be proven to be true, it's not against the Torah either. So there are ways to understand some of these things in a way which is not against the Torah. Again, I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but kfira is a pretty dangerous and charged word. I do not believe either of those is kfira. On the other hand, revelation of Torah, that's a problem. That's a major problem. The Rambam says we have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared at Sinai and gave us the entire Torah. That's fundamental. I'm talking to you day and a half before Shavuos. This is what the holiday is all about. Ma'amar HaSinai. It's an asay and a los asay. We shouldn't forget it. We should remember it, right, the Ramban, the Pasha Zaskana. Can't go against the revelation and be considered to be a proper Jew. So I don't know what this fellow has written. I do not know, and I can't give a definitive comment. I'll just say one thing. Don't distance him. He doesn't tell you anything. You'll have to have a don't ask, don't tell approach. The shalah, of course, only becomes with his bracha. Is a good bracha or not? Ramesh has two tshuvas about it. in the Chela Gimel Siman Yud Beis. He says that person could be a Mechalal Shabbos, Yitreif, and still get a bracha as long as he is, quote, Mamin Bashem Uvetorasso. So he believes when he says Hashem's name, he believes in Hashem. He says Torah, he believes in Torah. Rav Moshe does not go into the details of how he views the Torah. I don't want to make too much out of an inference. Could be Rav Moshe would say, as long as he believes in Hashem, believes in the Torah, even though he may not completely adhere to our version of Mamad Har Sinai, his bracha might still be a bracha. And of course, it depends on the niceties of what he actually wrote, which I didn't see. Number 10. With Shavuos being Friday and Shabbos, who's behind there is Yisrael for the parish for a number of weeks. If someone is making a bar mitzvah. In those intervening weeks, before they catch up, now they have pronouns, before they I assume means Eretz Yisrael. They catch up, on any of the times that this happens, whose responsibility would it be to be aware of this scenario? The father, the Rav, the bar mitzvah teacher? Could also have happened this past Shabbos Bar Midbar, and the boy was taught after of Bar Midbar instead of Machal Chodesh. These are all significant questions. We'll take the last one first. It's a little more straightforward. Here, it seems to me that if he was taught Bar Midbar and Shas Tzachka Bar Mitzvah Bacha, we might be allowed to let him lead Bar Midbar. I would do both. But if he's learned only Bar Midbar, if you look in the Piskei Tshuva Simulation page, Dallas, footnote 23, quotes a Shara Fryim, who said that if they made a mistake in Shul, and they lay in by Midbar, tell them HaKadosh, you don't have to go back. Good for the Evan. We have a rule, Shas HaTzchak in the Evan. And there are Tshuvas about his mother, Rachonim, as well, as far as the Haftorah is concerned. But the first case is much more complicated. What exactly is happening? It's not clearly clear what happened. Let's say, Sadim, they make a Bar Mitzvah here in America, and they're Israelis. So the bracha was taught the wrong parsha. He's taught the wrong parsha. So what do you do? That's a serious problem because.
I think the question was someone who's making a bar mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, in Eretz Yisrael, the other way around.
Making a bar mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael, and it's making it the parsha Shabbos after Parshas Naso, right? And it's Balosko in Israel, but the kid was taught that Torah Naso.
Thank you for clarifying. He knows the real case. Okay, let's assume this is what happened. The making of Bar Mitzvah the week after Parshas Naso. So therefore he was taught Bar Losra. But he comes there to draw the Leining Shlach. That's the question. So the only way to do that, you get at least six people from America who came that week, and you'll lay in Bar Losra. That's all. I thought the part of the question was the other way around. If you have to lane before you turn 13, if you want to lane the proper parsha, you're not by mitzvah yet. That could be a shaila. And even there, there's room to be lenient. Some poskim say that it's okay. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about his chelik beis, siman ayin beis, I believe it is, about that too. Either way, we have to make sure that the bar mitzvah comes out okay. Number 11. This Shabbos, if you have six Levim and four Yisraelim sons-in-law, going to have its own meal on Shabbos. How should they navigate Aliyahs for Shabbos morning? Yisrael first, both of them Levim and Yisraelim. So, fortunately, I found this too. In Pisgah Tshuva, Simon Kuf Lam and Hay, footnote 11, 117 and 18. You have the two Yisraelim go first, and you alternate Levi Yisrael, Levi Yisrael, Levi Yisrael. That's a shock, and there's a good reason for it. Number 12. The woman is in the shul, coming to say Kaddish, and no one else is saying Kaddish. What do I recommend to do? What should one do if they find themselves at a minyan, the only person saying Kaddish is a woman? Should they say Kaddish before they are able to? Should they answer the Kaddish? It's a very sensitive question. In our shul, as in many shuls, and we grew up in all shuls, women did not say Kaddish. And if you look in Pesach Tshuva, he talks about the importance of preserving Minhagei Yisrael. And I think it's a very negative phenomenon because it goes against Minhagei Yisrael, and we know that the age in which we live, and I do not approve. At the same time, in our shul, there was a woman who wanted to say Kaddish. was not a problem. She said it sort of in an undertone, didn't hear her, and someone else said along with her. And that's what we did. We're not going to prevent people from saying what they want to say, even though it's not our custom in our shul. Okay, but now what happens? You come to shul, and there's a woman saying Kaddish. So number one, a woman who wants to say Kaddish at a shul, where it's typically not said, should discuss it with someone beforehand, not just barge in and start saying Kaddish. It's like someone walks into a shul and starts saying Yotzus when they don't say Yotzus. You can't just walk and run roughshod over them and hug them every shul. But, okay, so let's say they do ask permission in advance. And they insist on saying Kaddish. So if they have such an insistence, I could be accommodate them and have a man say along with them, ask them to say it a little bit low, and that's what should be done in that case. But if they just barge in, ask no questions, and start saying Kaddish in full voice, and no one else is saying Kaddish, that's not right. We call that Eino Merusa L'Kol. And Eino Merusa L'Kol, you don't answer Amen. It's in Mefurish. I had that once in our shul. I was very upset with what they did. They were upset that people didn't answer Amen. And I guess you remain upset with one another. But you can't just walk in and then just trounce on the Nagam of a shul without even any consultation in advance. Next question. The people who need to carry their IDs to get entrance to a building on Shabbos in an air without an Erev. Is it acceptable to put in a plastic pouch and make it part of a key belt loop like people do for their keys when tying around their waist? I don't know. If you look carefully in the Svarim, if you look at Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, Perek Yutches Sif Memtes, it only works, the belt, if the key is part of the belt. When I lived in Washington Heights, I had such a belt, and that's how I carried the key to go out, you know, get into my building. That was what we did. You had a key, but the key was an integral part of the belt system. If the key wasn't there, the belt would be off, out of whack, would be off kilter, wouldn't be proper. So the key served an important role. This idea is just an attachment. There's no role whatsoever. I don't think that's any heter at all. So obviously we have to try to do is to get the ID be held by the security guard or make some other arrangement. If it's completely impossible and you have to go somewhere, the only heter I have for you is shinui. Put it in your shoe. Some other funny way to carry it. It's also a shatat chak, only if it's no alternative. 40. On the balcony, and most weeks there is no one available to do maftir except for me. I gave myself the aliyah of the tovah as the minig. I gave myself maftir as well. Is that correct? First day Shavuot starts the difference. It's giving that aliyah to the rav enough reason to facilitate getting two aliyahs. C. A lady prepared a maftir and it turned out he was the only Levi in shul. As he spent a lot of time preparing, I did not want to upset him and take it away from him, give it to myself, so I gave him two aliyahs, rather than sending him out and giving the coin to aliyahs. How is this best to handle such a situation? I believe the first two and the third are different from one another. The idea that the Balkore gets a tochacha, and the idea that the rabbi gets a teresa dibris, that's not found anywhere. A good menhagim, the very good menhagim, but it's not a halacha. I would say, let someone else get the tochacha if you can find somebody. Let someone else take the aseret dibris, and then you give the mafter to the other individual. The third case is different. The third case, that's already a significant problem, because you know what are you going to do in such a situation? He prepared so long. You want to send him out. You don't want to call him out also. Not good. So, see, you don't want to send the Levi out. You don't want to upset him. So I think in that kind of situation, it's okay to give him two aliyahs. It's a b'dieved two aliyahs. But the first two cases don't rise to such a level to, in my opinion, rely on the b'dieved. The third case does. 50. A mother took out a life insurance policy on her life. But in the name of her adult children. The children are the legal owners of the policy. Their names are the only ones on them. The children should be the ones paying the premiums. But every year, the mother gave them the premiums amount as a gift. Well, technically, the children could have used the money for whatever purpose they chose. They know their mother would have been very upset if it went to anything other than the premium. The mother's Baruch Hashem is still alive, but the children have decided to sell off the policy now, keeping its proceeds. When it comes to calculating by successor, are they able to count the premium as their own cost, reducing the amount on which they pay Meiser, or is that not acceptable? Because their mother was really the one paying the premium. That's not acceptable for that very reason. Not acceptable. At the same time, it's important to note that Meiser Ksavim, which said many times, is a non-binding minhag. And therefore, if a person can't afford it, they can't afford it. But if they can't afford it, they want to give Meiser from everything, I think that the fact that the mother paid the premiums, they cannot reduce that amount. Number 16. Says in the past, we could please review our security cameras can be used in Shul on Shabbos and Yom. Can cameras be installed in the sanctuary and but the medrash people learn and daven? Security officials recommend them so they can be accessed by law enforcement in the case of an emergency. We preferred that they, whole long story, not record any sound. The higher resolution when someone walks by, what's the story in that case? Here's the answer. It's permissible, technically speaking, because a person walks by a security camera, it's a psik ratio to lo nichle by the rabbana. You don't want to be on the camera. You want the ganav to be on the camera. So it's a lo nichle, in my opinion. I said, the rabbana, I don't see any derisive over here. So I think it's okay. I think it's much better. There should be no sound. You don't need the sound. And frankly, I'm afraid there shouldn't be a sound. If you have a sound in the sanctuary, next thing you know, they're going to want to have their bar mitzvah brothers landing on, which was recorded, for their files. It would be a terrible thing. So to prevent that even possibility, should have no recording. You don't need recording for the security as far as I answer. With our shul, we have a camera, but there's no recording. And as far as changing the resolution, technically speaking, it's once again permissible. It's a specific ratio to nichole. However, it seems to me that it's better, it should not be changed, leave it the way it is. That's what we have in our own shul. Of course, a little bit more, it's still better that way. Number 17. The Rama writes that the Indian to eat dairy on Shavuos is only the first day of Shavuos. Why is that specifically for the first day and not the second day? Many people in practice have dairy on both the first and second day. Being that this year the second day is on Shabbos, as it prefer to only have meat on the second day because it is Shabbos. In general, you know, on the first day, it's best to follow the Ramah's recommendation to begin the meal with dairy and then transition to meat to fulfill the need of having butter for Simchas Yom Tov. It's a very good question. The Ramah is based upon Shtei Alechem, which you have in Shavuos, and you have two Alechem, you have to have one for Milchus and one for Fleishik. That's his minig. Most people that I know today do not follow the Ramah's minig. They follow the Mishnah Brewer's minhag. That's what they learned in day school, that they didn't have the ability to prepare fleishik meals when they got the Torah Har Sinai. The Mishnah Brewer writes, you have to know how to shecht, you have to know how to treber, you have to know how to salt, you have to have the cook. No one had the ability to do such a thing. So therefore, they had milchiks. If that's the reason, by definition, it's milchiks only. The opposite of what the Ramah's original customs of two breads, one for milk and one for flesh. I think that's the most prevailing custom, is that milk is only. And the question of it comes, what about Simchas Yom Tov? It's a very, very good question. A very good question. So number one, Psak Halacha is, for Simchas Yom Tov, it's sufficient to have meat, wine, once every 24 hours. Only once. Not more than that. And therefore, the prevailing custom is milchiks at night, fleishiks by day. It can be both days if you want. That's the psak halacha. I know there are others who disagree. Sternberg is upset with this custom, but the Pesukei Teshuvah quotes that the stipler did it that way. No less than authority. Siman Tov Sadi Dalit, footnote 111, milchiks at night, fleishiks by day. That's what I do. Follow the stipler against the Moad de Muzman. Once is enough. Now, which day is which? So in our home, we typically do it on the second night. First of all, from the perspective of the Ramos minig, it's only a minig. You weren't prepared. The second night does the trick. And number two, Sarah to Rabbanon. So why should we take a chance on a Doraisa? We have one milk of Gemilah usually the second night. But this year, as a questioner pointed out, Shabbos, since we use our flesh every single Shabbos, we're not going to make an exception to that. We're not going to have milchiks the very first time of Shavuos. Let's go on. 18. The Mishnah at the very beginning of Hilchos Tefillah cites the Prima Gadim in Siman 494. It's about Shavuos, who said that on the morning of the first day of Shavuos, one can daven Shmon Esrei even before Netzach Chalam. This recommends not reciting Kriya Shema for the Mishayakim. Can this be relied upon, or should it be avoided? The advantage of following this Eitzah is that Shachar will be much earlier, waiting for Nates, which could allow more people to stay up learning, Lel Shavuos, and also have more concentration when they daven. Think the other way around. People should learn longer. How often do they have a chance to learn all night? They should learn all night and daven for seeking. That's always was the meaning of that way. That's always been the meaning. I think that should continue to be the meaning. Again, obviously, if a person can't do it for whatever reason, you can daven as early as Alos HaShachar and get to Birchas Krishma, Misha Yakir. Now, when's Misha Yakir? Another story. I have a very early Misha Yakir, so therefore you can really start very early. The little lady Mika Yakir can't start that early anyway. But again, in our shul, I think most should be daven for Sikha. Number 19. An Erev Shabbos. Excuse me, on Erev Rosh Chodesh Tevan, there's a minute to say Tzilas HaShalom. This year, Rosh Chodesh fell out on Shabbos. Was one supposed to say it on Thursday? If he did not, was he allowed to say it on Shabbos? This is not only for this past year, it's true for next year too. Same kind of calendar. So, you know, in the state of Nitei Gabriel, he associates Tzilas HaShalom with fasting. He says it should be done on Thursday, because we don't fast on Friday. That's what he says. I saw in some of the various periodicals, they say that maybe it can even be done on Shabbos. Well, the Or HaShabbos, number 29, page 18, a machlokas about that. It seems to me that if you have to say it, you might as well say it on Thursday, if you remember. If you don't say it on Thursday, you can say it on Friday. If you don't say it on Friday, you're really desperate, you can say it on Shabbos too. Many posts can say it's okay to ask for spiritual blessings on Shabbos, although not everyone agrees. Number 20. On Shavuos morning, some of the appointed sleeper did not make it to the early minyan, and everyone stayed up all night. The Maaseh, should we say Birchas HaTorah in the morning, Timach Lokas in the Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan? What should we do about the other Birchas HaShachar? The Aruch HaShulchan seems to say Lo Plug, make all the brachas in the morning, even if nobody's left. Everything. So I think we have a right to rely on the Aruch HaShulchan for this, though the Mishnah Berurah has disagreements on some of the details. Many people fall asleep at night. It's hard to believe, as the shul of more than 10 people, that every single person was up every single minute of the night. It's hard to believe. Fall asleep a little bit, room to be makel, even more room to be makel, like the Aruch HaShulchan. I'm calling it makel. To refile the Aruch HaShulchan and say all the brachas as well. 21. Someone napped Erev Shavuos, should he have in mind to be Yotzi with Avas Olam at night? If he did not, can he rely upon Rabbi Kivegas and Mamonashach and make a Birchas HaTorah himself in the morning? If he did, he said Avas Olam, does that ruin the Mamonashach? Absolutely yes. It ruins the Mamonashach. We don't follow this Avas Olam at night. We pass in the halacha. A person naps during the day, you don't make a Birchas HaTorah. We do not require to have in mind Avas Olam for the night learning. We just don't. And therefore, the Mamana Shach works. That's what I tell people. The Mamana Shach works. 22. About a month after Pesach, a bottle of bourbon whiskey was purchased from Costco, a store which the local Vada says to be not Jewish owned. The bottle of whiskey was later discovered to have been produced by a distiller that's assumed to be Jewish owned, and which does not sell its chametz for Pesach. This whiskey thus appears to be chametz for Pesach. May the bottle be returned to Costco for a refund, perhaps on the assumption that the sale was a mekartos, or would receiving a refund for the bottle be also on the grounds that it is a form of Hana. Does it make any difference here that the bourbon whiskey, though certainly made partly from grain and thus chametz, is by definition distilled from at least 51% corn? Clearly that makes a big difference. And I think that in this case, because it's not real chametz, I believe we can rely on the svara of the questioner. It's a mekach tos. I'm not getting hana from this chametz because I never owned the chametz. Imagine if someone put chametz that you never bought, put it on your table, and you seal the owner, but you give it back. You give it back. Of course, the difference over here is getting money back. But one can argue, you're not getting, the whole thing was a mistake. The money you gave them is really your money, not their money. An argument can be made in both directions. But certainly in this case, where it's 51% corn, you have a right to be more lenient. 23. Is it better to daven in the mincha minyan that does hecha kedusha, or a minyan that says fulcha daras hashas, that gets up to chazara, while he isn't finished with his shmon esrei, he misses chazara? There's details, and then there's a global issue. It seems to me, as a general principle, in the part of the world that we inhabit, we strongly prefer full chazara hashas. I'm familiar with the fact that in some yeshivas, they do what they call Echad Kedusha. I'm not here to criticize anybody, and maybe in certain school settings that's what's preferred. Surprisingly, even in certain yeshiva gedolos, where everyone is so firm, they also do it that way. And what about Bittul Torah? Okay, more power to them. So it seems to me that the question depends on the reality. If you can find a min of Chazaras Hashatz where you can daven like a mensch, even if you will not be able to catch the Chazaras Hashatz, still better. You like Chazaras Hashatz. So you won't hear the whole thing. You'll catch up. You'll hear the second part of Chazaras Hashatz. You've davened with a tzibur completely the way it's supposed to be davened. You start together. Obviously, you end at different times. Every person has a different pace. That's a full, perfect tefillah b'tzibur. That's the highest level. That's what should be done. On the other hand, if you will daven a Hei Kedusha, and we call it Yeshiva Minyan, you daven slowly, and you'll also have Kedusha, which you wouldn't get otherwise, that's also something to be considered. But in this fast Minyanim, it's a problem. You can hardly keep up with the chazan of the Echad Kedusha. So here, I'm not giving you a definitive answer to this question. It depends on the number of circumstances we just spoke about. But the default is, a minyan which has full chazaras hashatz is the preferred type of a minyan. I want to wish everybody a chag sameach.